Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, April 20th, 2009, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
And don't be too upset. We're just as much in the wrong as you are. If this got out, we'd all be ruined.
Wait a minute. I'm innocent. I tell you I'm innocent. Besides, I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Today, I have yet another installment in my series of interviews called The Erotic Mind. My guest is Dale Lazarov. He chats with us in conjunction with his upcoming appearance at the internationally renowned Seattle Erotic Art Festival. Dale is an erotic author and editor who works with an array of very talented graphic artists. Together, they produce an acclaimed line of gay-oriented, sexually explicit comics. Their collaborations, published by the distinguished German publisher Bruno Gemunder, result in a celebration of joyful lust. In fact, the comics are so well done they convey their storyline without using any words. No mean feat that, I can tell you.
Oh, really?
Absolutely, you can trust me, ma'am. If you are like me and love smart, sexy, erotic art with a wry sense of humor, be sure to check out Dale and his collaborators' work on their publisher's site, BrunoGemunder.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up the How-To Video Library. My video library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. But also, it's a wonderful resource for sexual enrichment programming, too. Say you want to know a little bit more about BDSM or fetish sex, swinging, or the like. Or you want to know how to become a world-class cocksucker or pussy licker. Well, you're in luck. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh-so-informative videos right from the comfort of your own home. How sweet is that? Check it out. You'll find a link to Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library right there on the top of the page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the tab that reads Video On Demand. Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Dale, and thank you so much for joining us. Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
Hello, listeners on the internet.
I'm so glad that we're here talking because it coincides with your upcoming appearance at the internationally renowned Seattle Erotic Art Festival. Will this be your first time in Seattle?
No, I've been in Seattle twice before. It's a very lovely city, and I've often thought about moving there, but, you know, I'm sort of wondering if everybody else is moving there, how hard is it going to be? I mean, it's like, I might as well stay in Chicago. There'll be everybody else move to Seattle, and I'll stay here.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you'll be doing at the festival?
Actually, I'm doing a panel with three other folks who do gay erotic comics, two of them which have worked with me. Steve McIsaac, who did Sticky with me and has his own comic called Shirtlifter. Patrick Filion, who does Class Comics and is most famous for Camille Cat and other sort of superheroic type of porn characters. And Grubskin, who's worked on a short story with me that was in Best Gay Erotica. And he does really wonderful, filthy, scruffy punk guy. And that's what I wrote for. Since we both love skinheads and we both love ska and ska style guys, I wrote him a story involving those characters. So basically, I mean, I needed an excuse to get people together in one place and try this for the first time because I've never done any sort of event involving my comics for obvious reasons. I mean, who wants to talk to a pornographer?
I know I do.
But you're a very special person.
Well, that's without saying.
So I thought, where better else to do my first appearance than at Seattle Erotic Arts Festival, where I knew Dropskin had attended. It's close enough to Canada, so Patrick can attend, and Steve had expressed interest in attending, too.
Well, wonderful.
So it all sort of worked out like magic.
Excellent. So you've received some very impressive accolades for your gay erotic comics. Clive Barker, of all people, called your stuff sexy, stylish, and minimalist, an intense mixture of erotic realism and the freedom of comic storytelling. That must have made your day.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I got to tell you, I squealed like a supermodel.
When
I was like, oh, my God, oh, my God. Okay. After I calmed down, I wrote back saying thank you.
Oh, that's great.
It's just fun because, you know, I mean, people recognize your stuff pretty instantly. It's not like they have to go through, you know, a period where people have to agree that your stuff is good before they can say it's good.
Yes.
It's like automatic love it, hate it.
Yeah.
And that's an experience I haven't had before as somebody who works as a writer.
Mm-hmm. You say that your aspiration is to be the Stan Lee of man-on-man erotic comics. I'm not a comic book aficionado myself, but there seems to be a very thin line between the classic Marvel Comics superheroes and the sweet carnality of your work.
Well, see, this is the thing. I'm not thinking that. I'm more thinking about Stan Lee work with a whole like extremely talented people and created some rather groundbreaking comics that have had a pretty profound influence in his genre.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm not trying to do what Stan Lee did specifically.
Uh-huh.
I want to have his impact and all the artists he worked with.
I see.
So because he doesn't, you know, I mean, he worked with two of the best comic book artists of all time.
Uh-huh.
And besides, God knows, you know, how many other people since the 60s. And the other thing that I think makes sense with that metaphor is Stan Lee's comics, he brought in sort of a whole bunch of... He added one more dimension to his genre. They're still sort of flattish characters in the 1960s, but they're at least much more human than the superhero characters before him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to add more dimensions to a genre that's already pre-existing.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this sort of, you know, there was a lot of, you know, drama in his stuff, which I don't really use as a model for myself.
Uh-huh.
But certainly the sort of love of life, the joyfulness, the puckishness of
uh-huh.
his characters
uh-huh.
are very much part of me
uh-huh.
too.
They're pretty vulnerable superheroes, or at least characters. I mean, they're conflicted. They, you know, they have much more of an emotional life than, you know, some of the other folks who have virtually none.
Yeah, well, you see, but you know, I mean, I have to be honest. I like my superheroes optimistic, which probably explains why I like porn that smiles.
Uh-huh.
And that's probably more than anything explains why my porn comics are fairly, really quite optimistic, quite
yes,
frankly,
right,
and cheerful and playful and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's my take on porn too. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I really like, and that's the kind of stuff that I produce with Daddy O Productions. But yes, absolutely. I like not just the humanness, but you know, a sense of humor that goes along with the smut.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I cannot be more turned off by stuff that takes extremely seriously, especially when they're trying really hard to sort of pose.
Mm-hmm.
It's so artificial to me. For me, sex is fun. It isn't about, you know, trying to live up to some sort of ridiculous ideal.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there is idealization in my comics, but at the same time, there's so much variety. And, you know, and they're like, if their characters are perfect, they're perfect for their own specific type.
Right.
They're not the same over
right.
and over and over.
Right. Yeah.
Now, of course, I have the limitations that my publisher of what my publisher expects. Like, I don't think they would go for a bear book per se, mm-hmm. or anything that they that could be labeled bear very easily, mm-hmm. Because they want to appeal to a large international audience. So mm-hmm. we play, okay, the guys are different kinds of muscular and different kinds of hairy. They're all masculine. Mm-hmm. You know, one or two have bellies. Most of them don't, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. Mm-hmm. So while I would love to do something more traditional, bear, so to speak, and traditional is a ridiculous word for use because the bear culture maybe has like 20 years on it. They would rather not make the market so narrow and so bound to a label. And I have to respect that.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that kind of underscores the stereotyping that often happens in sexual work of whatever stripe, erotica or, you know, pornography, at least in the gay subculture. Would you not agree?
I would say so. I mean, it's, let me put it this way. It's when it's a question of self-identification, uh-huh. or it's a question of trying to articulate and understand what something is, it's not a problem. Uh-huh. When it's about creating rigid boundaries that people must stick to or else, then it's a problem.
Right.
So it's a question, you know, are you using it to identify or are you using to limit?
Right. Yes. Well, that's a good point.
And I don't use labels to limit. I really don't. Mm-hmm. There's this fellow on this mailing list who really had a problem that Manly was drawn by a woman, mm-hmm. because somehow he couldn't be excited by the fact that it wasn't drawn by a gay man.
Yeah.
Now, at the same time, I had a much easier time selling Manly to women who read M/M porn, which is mm-hmm. basically an indication of, oh, it's not gay, it's just two men having sex, which mm-hmm. is a distinction that I find, well, you know, it probably has its usefulness in the market because mm-hmm. they wouldn't say, oh, that's meant for me. Mm-hmm. But no, if it's good, everybody should have access to it, you know?
So we should mention at this juncture, I think, for our audience, you are not the illustrator of your work. You are the author or the writer, maybe even the producer. It would be a very good description. But you work with brilliant illustrators who illustrate your stories. Is that correct?
Yes, but I would describe it more as a writer / editor.
I see. Because
I write the scripts and I edit the art. I help market the book. I help promote it. All
yes.
that stuff.
Yes.
I do everything but the actual drawing and coloring of the books.
You write the scripts for your comics, mm-hmm. but since your comics are wordless, you really have to be precise in the execution of the illustration in order for the story to work. Is that not correct?
That's correct.
Can you tell us a little bit more how that process works?
Well, basically, there's two parts to the process. There's me writing the script, and then there's me helping the illustrator interpret it.
Uh-huh.
The first part, basically, I imagine a page in my head. You know, there's certain rules that are consistent in all comic narrative, and I just choose a story that can be dramatized visually without any dialogue. Mm-hmm. There's two reasons for this. Number one, we work with an international publisher that distributes the book everywhere. So in order to not have to deal with multiple publishers or with having to pay translators, and also not having to deal with how difficult it is to write pornographic dialogue that doesn't sound cheesy.
Uh-huh.
So basically, there's two reasons. There's a market reason and there's an aesthetic reason.
Exactly. And besides, if you say something, if one of your characters says something that doesn't necessarily resonate with, you know, somebody in your audience, that could be a big turnoff.
Absolutely. And the thing is, with the pulling the dialogue out of it allows people to create their own.
Exactly.
And they engage with the story. It's actually a more immersive experience.
Uh-huh.
Because they have to interact with the material and give it language if they want to.
Yes.
Then, I mean, majority of people listen to porn with the sound off. Anyway. So it's not like a huge disruption.
Uh-huh.
In terms of pornography, it's not a huge disruption.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at the old cult films of the 70s and 80s,
uh-huh.
they're like my comics. They're
yes.
like short little short stories. There's no dialogue. Everything is told through gesture and action. So there's so – and then, you know, if you look at past history, Tom Phillips comics were by and large wordless.
Yes, that's where I wanted to go next. He said you actually do follow in a long line of wordless erotic comics. Tom of Finland, as you just mentioned, is one probably well known to most everyone in my audience. Who else inspires you along these lines?
Well, as I mentioned, the cult silence.
Uh-huh.
There's and the thing is, the earlier stuff really does have that sort of sweetness to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's a sense of humor, and it's kind of charming and funny and sweet, and there's some post-coital action that involves
uh-huh.
guys being sweet to each other,
uh-huh.
or at least very friendly.
Yes.
And you don't see that in the recent stuff.
Yes,
it's like
that's true.
The entire chemistry of the sexual congress has changed, and that's one thing I'd like to bring back. This
well,
sort of like... Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was gonna say, you know, the pressure upon pornographers, myself included, is that one has to give his or her audience X amount of, you know, orgasms or cum shots per 20 minutes, and to satisfy this, you know, the audience that has, you know, just basically grown up on, you know, quick and fast and easy, you know, kinds of things. There is no room, or there virtually is no room for pornographers, myself included, to, you know, expand that and, you know, allow for character development and, you know, camaraderie and body contact that is not necessarily genital. So, you know, the pressure is on, and I suppose if it's happening in my area, it certainly is happening in yours as well.
I don't. Nobody's told me. Nobody's told me. You must have a cum shot every six pages. I'm not.
Well, that's great. That's really wonderful.
That's. What can I tell you? I mean,
would you comply if somebody expected that?
Let me put it this way. I think that if my publisher said you need to have a cum shot every six pages, I would say then you're not doing comics. You're basically doing, you know, just setups for the orgasm.
Right. Good for you. Good point. Good point.
And the thing is, I mean, it's comics. You set up the pace in which you read them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like you have to wait 20 minutes to get to the page where they orgasm.
Right.
You can move as fast or as slow as you like.
Yeah.
You control the speed in which you read it.
Yeah.
So I would say that the orgasm count issue will ever show up in comics. Yeah. Certainly, there's a story in Manly that has like about 6, 7, 8 orgasms in it.
Mm-hmm.
The last one, if you recall, the one called Hot Librarian, that has multiple cum shots in it. And they're all incredible amounts of cum in bukkake comic style.
Of course.
So it's, so I have not received any complaints.
Yeah. But you know, I know that, you know, some of the erotic authors that I have, interviewed, particularly people like James Lear, have said that, you know, he knows that his audience demands X amount of sex scenes, you know, in his short chapters of his novels. And a lot of the other writers who are writing only short stories say that they have to, you know, give their audience as much sex in a short story as possible. I mean, it is the nature of the medium, I suspect.
Well, the thing is, this is comics.
Yeah.
And we're published by an art book publisher. it's up. They don't have the same kind of very rigid ideas of you must fulfill X amount of things than someone who puts out pornography alone.
Right.
One could imagine. I mean, they have published books that have no that are softcore that
yes.
have no orgasmic, no penetration
right.
images.
Right. Right.
None of the stuff that you would assume hardcore comics has.
Right.
So the rules don't really apply. I mean, it's basically if there's any limitation, they would have an issue with the body types.
Yes.
Because my publisher doesn't like young guys.
Yes.
And it does like some bears, but not exclusively.
Yes.
So basically, we're talking men over 25 is what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because that's what their audience expects,
yes.
right?
Yes.
And I respect that completely.
Yes.
It's a good thing that it matches completely with my interests.
It is a good thing. So how did you get your start as a writer and editor?
Well, basically, Steve McIsaac, who drew the first book I did called Sticky, he asked me to write for him. He knew of my writing, and he just said, I want to try to work on my craft as an artist and do a porn book just to learn how to draw anatomy better and sort out my storytelling and so on and so forth. And I had known Steve for multiple years at that point. I said, why the hell not? It just happened to come out naturally, pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed that so much, and I really enjoyed the accolades so much that I said, oh, gee, I have to do more.
Mm-hmm.
And because Sticky had such a profound impact when it came out, especially with other gay illustrators, it was very easy for me to find other people to work with. Like Amy, who drew Sticky, is a fan of Manly. Delek Van Lund, who is drawing Fancy, is a fan of Sticky. So when I asked him, I found him online,
because
it's so easy on the internet to find people to work with.
It's so true.
I just said, oh, I love your stuff. You would be perfect for a fantasy theme book. Do you want to work with me? And he said, oh, absolutely. You know, he totally, like, it was instantaneous.
Oh, great.
And we had great chemistry, because I wrote for what he knows how to draw. Now, in the past, I've made mistakes of giving a script that I wrote for nobody in particular to someone, and it didn't really worked out.
Mm-hmm.
For better or for worse, you have to find the artist that works with the material.
Right.
Like the fellow who's Foxy Andy is drawing Chums,
mm-hmm.
and he has a style that's very much, very youthful, very much kind of Archie comics-y. And I don't mean that in an insult. I mean it as the way to describe it.
Uh-huh.
It's very clean, slightly cartoony, but everything he draws is very butch and masculine.
Yes.
Like he draws some really beautiful, beautiful leather guys. He really does.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I wrote a story involving two guys in high school who hooked up, and then they meet 25 years later in their high school reunion.
Mm-hmm.
And he was perfect because he was able to draw in a sort of both the 80s stuff and the present day stuff. So you have both Twink and Daddy Sax in the same story. That story has two orgasms in it, so if you're keeping count.
Are your characters modeled on people that you know, or are they merely products of your vivid imagination?
Well, I can't really say they come from one place.
Uh-huh.
Let me put it this way. If you go out, I'm really attracted to bouncers. I really am. Big, scary, hulking guys who are there to protect you absolutely turn my crank.
Mm-hmm.
And I've realized at this point that I've written two of them.
One's
in Sticky and one's in Nightlife. And I have to be very mindful not to repeat it again because I don't want to become like those gay pornographers who do the same kind of guy over and over.
Yes, yes.
I love cowboys, and I've only done one of those. I've done two cops. I've done one sort of scruffy. There's multiple scruffy guys because this is one of my main types. But some of them are urban. Some of them are more like southern scruffy good old boys. Anybody who is sort of slightly that needs a little bit of cleaning up, I absolutely love. They don't need to clean up for me. They can stay just the way they are. So there are certain things I find really, really attractive. Mm-hmm. I love balding guys. I love bald guys. I love beards, facial hair of all kinds, mustaches, goatees, everything. That's has to show up.
Uh-huh.
It's one of those things it's not that I don't like smooth guys, but if this is porn, may as well choose for them to have some kind of facial hair that I find attractive.
Right.
By and large, if there's anything that's consistent with all the characters, is that they have both outer butchness and inner cuteness.
Ah. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, because, you know, it's like, for example, the librarian in the last story, he has this very butch 19th century stash, and he's really built and has a huge belly. There's absolutely nothing femmy about him, and yet the way he wears his outfits to the leather Levi's bar implies a certain kind of playfulness.
Uh-huh.
Like it's not really obvious, but when you look at what one of the outfits is, he's dressed like a train engineer.
So, would you say that your comics are erotic or pornographic, or is this an unhelpful or unnecessary distinction?
Well, see, pornography, I called it filth. I mean,
well, that kind of covers. Smut is a good one, too. I use that all the time.
Smut is fine. It's just smut. Filth is just, for me, it implies both perversity and sexuality at the same time. And the thing is, as perverse people go, I'm pretty lighthearted and life-affirming. But still, it just amuses me to call it that way.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I mean, if there's anything, pornography is perfectly fine. I consume it. I don't need stuff to have the dimensions of erotica. But I enjoy fine erotica too.
Great. Yes.
My particular, if you ask me to define my work, I call it filth because I don't want to make it seem that other stuff is less than mine.
Right. And interestingly enough, that's a common thread that runs through all the people that I've interviewed so far, regardless of what, you know, art they are producing, arts made of words or arts, graphic arts or visual arts. It's all the same thing. They don't want to make that distinction where one segment of the erotic art world is denigrated so that another art form might flourish.
Yeah, I mean, it's every work should be judged by its own ambitions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't pretend to create fine literature. and at the same time, I know that what I'm doing just in so many different ways is so distinctively well put together.
Uh-huh.
Like I can tell you, the amount of time that we spend, the artist and I, trying to get the storytelling to work.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if we didn't care if this was hacked out, it wouldn't be as good.
Yes.
I mean, if anything, we want people to notice, like, wow, this is not only hot, this is really well put together.
Yes.
Because one of my complaints about gay erotic comics is that they're not good comics.
Yeah.
The storytelling is difficult to read. If you take out the words, you don't know what the fuck's going on.
Yes.
Pardon, pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
So if anything, we take the art, the craft aspect of it very seriously, and of course the ideological too, because we don't want to send out anything that would be problematic for other people. Yeah. Like, say,
I noticed that your characters wear condoms, for example.
Yes, yes, and in the book that's Fancy, which is set in an imaginary past, because we have a barbarian story and we have a story involving kindly woodsmen of fairy tales, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth, because at the time nobody needed condoms, they bareback.
Right.
So there is a justification in story for the presence or absence of safe sex.
Right.
And even And you know, I play with that too. The second story in Manly specifically addresses what can guys do when the condoms have run out.
a difficult conundrum.
Yes. Well, let me put it this way. Human sexuality is very complicated and very creative. Mm-hmm. And if you're only satisfied with anal penetration, you're losing out on so many other things.
Most assuredly. So, we all recognize that erotic artists abound these days, but in some circles, this genre is still not accepted as mainstream. Have you been on the receiving end of criticism for the work that you do? Has your art been denigrated by others, possibly others who create comics, because of its content?
I find most people are very accepting.
Good.
I mean, even if they don't enjoy it or don't care for it, they respect it.
Oh,
it's
good.
It's not like, I mean, we're talking about most comics people have a really strong sense of being a sort of a cultural minority.
Mm-hmm.
And most gay people understand that they're a cultural minority, unless they're really bitter. So by and large, people say, wow, I can really understand how much work went into this,
mm-hmm.
Which for me is really meaningful. For me, yes, I want you to have an orgasm, and, you know, separate from that, there's other values to the work. And by and large, most people understand the values of the work, not only aesthetically, but also in terms of it being an object that has a point.
Uh-huh.
We've been reviewed by straight guys, and by and large, unless there's like, hee-hee, look at them fags, they generally will say, wow, this is actually a really powerful statement.
Yeah.
Politically, because these guys have no shame. They
uh-huh.
they're not. It's not about their sexuality is about relating.
Uh-huh.
It's not about trying to prove something about themselves.
Yeah.
Or there's no self-loathing involved. Yes, there's human interactions, but they're fairly wholesome. There's no mean-spiritedness to the sexuality, even when there's rough play, which
uh-huh.
is what I find really special.
Uh-huh.
I mean, let me put it this way. You have to find the right artist to do that stuff so it works, so it communicates that way.
Uh-huh.
It's like Amy will show two guys roughhousing, and it looks like fun.
Uh-huh.
With another artist, it looks like rape.
Right.
And that's the last thing I want in a comic.
Right, exactly.
I mean, there's
that.
Already plenty of rape images in gay culture. We don't need any more. I certainly am not turned on by them.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that somebody else is, and they're widely overrepresented already. So
right.
There's nothing in it for me.
So that gets me to my next question, and that is, are there topics that you gravitate toward and topics that you avoid? You say that you avoid images that could represent violence, sexual violence.
Well, I avoid sexual humiliation.
Uh-huh.
I avoid rape situations. I avoid any sort of interaction that is dehumanizing.
Uh-huh.
Like, say, for example, if I were ever to do the traditional happy meal prostitute story,
uh-huh.
he wouldn't feel denigrated by it. He would love it.
Absolutely.
He's like, you know, I'm getting paid for something I would do for free. That would be his.
and some pros are really good at what they do, and I'm
exactly.
so happy that they're around providing
exactly.
the services that they do.
Exactly, but that sort of combination of sexuality and condemnation just doesn't do it for me.
Uh-huh.
Like, say, if anything, I want to show that sexuality is not only about getting off, but it's a way of communicating.
Right.
And it's a way of mutually validating each other.
So what does the future hold for you in your work?
Well, right now I have several books in development with different artists. In the immediate future, as I said, Nightlife's on the way, coming out next fall from Grunder. I also mentioned that Fancy is going to be completed sometime in the near future, and hopefully we'll get it out. And right now I'm working on Chums with Foxy Andy, as I mentioned. I'm working on Powerpop Boys with Miyoki, who is a great, great gay illustrator who asked me to work with him. So I am, like, very proud of that. Also, because of the economic conditions, people are very skittish about taking risks. So, say, the fantasy theme books, I probably will need a better economy to put them out, even though, ironically, the way that I go about it tends to be more mainstream than superhero comic books do. And, you know, basically, yeah, I have to be very mindful of the market. I mean, we're published by a book publisher, and we go through bookstores. So the assumptions one makes about what people want to buy tend to be very different. By and large, I would love to I don't think I'll ever run out of ideas for gay porn comics. At this point, I'm sort of in cruise control, pun unintended, about, you know, if another artist walks into my path, I'll write another book. I'm trying to get Manly 2 together with Amy. Next fall, I will write three more scripts for her, and she's going to take probably a couple more years to draw that, because most of the people I work with have day jobs, just like I do. So it takes a while for things to come together, because they're doing their own work and, you know, giving up a Sunday to draw three pages or something like that.
So where can we buy your work?
Well, most people buy it through Amazon. Because of the nature of the work, people rarely stumble on it. By and large, they hear about it online, go to Amazon, and buy the book. You also could get it through gay bookstores or through independent bookstores in big cities. If you go to an indie bookstore in a more conservative town, you're not going to find it. But say if you go to an independent bookstore in New York City, chances are that you will, if they have a big gay and lesbian section.
But as long as we can find it online, that's a good thing.
Yeah, you know, you can find it. I mean, online you can find it everywhere. You can buy it through Barnes & Noble. You can buy it through Borders. Borders technically carries it, but they probably are only in the big city stores. Also, there's TLA is also a good place to find my books. I would also suggest A Different Light in San Francisco. They have mail order. You also have mail order from Lambda Rising in D.C. carries it too. You can mail order from them. Actually, if any store online will be happy to get it for you. Because we are distributed worldwide by major bookstore distributor chains.
Well, I want to thank you for so much of your precious time. Now I just think you should get back to work.
Well, thank you.
And we will be enjoying your images on my site and linking back to your sites, and we will be seeing you in cyberspace.
Very good. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad you could join me. Tune in next week for more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business.
I think you'd better sit down. I think we've got some talking to do.
I guess we do, but let me finish here first. Check it out, sex fans. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of DrDickSexAdvice.com. Look for the tab that reads Video on Demand. There's no membership fee. This is a pay-per-minute sort of deal. And I hope you're all tuning in on Wednesdays, when I bring you yet another series of podcast interviews called Sex Edgeucation. In this series, we are investigating the world of fetish and kink, and discussing topics like BDSM and power play, polyamory, swinging, with prominent practitioners and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles. This new series premiered back in February and will continue on Wednesdays. along with these, my regular podcasts, on Monday. Be sure to look for all my podcasts on iTunes. Once in the podcast section, all you have to do is search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. And don't forget to subscribe. When you do, leave a comment. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.